The Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel.
Bartel, clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic.
We love a bit of magic from Jimmy, and he's back again with us on a Monday morning. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, gentlemen. How are we?
We're going great. How's your world?
It's not bad. Not bad. I think we've Geelong and Richmond are, I think, franked their premiership contentions over the weekend. And I think your form ladder is just looking brilliant. Half with a narrow, I guess, nail-biting win for the Demons over the Saints.
We tip this, Jim.
This is good for your form ladder. It's good for your form ladder.
Why did you go down this path to start with the form ladder? Now we'll talk about it for the next hour, Jim.
Because you know the key here, Rammer, you got to get the driver on side. So like,
that's true.
You know,
when you're doing a long road trip,
did many a long road trips as a kid up and down the Hume Highway. If you get the driver on side, you might get a sneaky stop somewhere here.
Yeah.
A little roadhouse for an extra snack.
You have a chance for a Chucky Thick Shack somewhere along the line, Jim. This sort of stuff keeps up. Yeah, exactly. Sneaky cheeseburger and Chucky Thick Shack. Spot on. Spot on. We'll get to the form ladder because it's an important part of the story in 2020, as everyone out there in football land knows. They're all talking about it. Don't pretend they're not, Rammer. I don't know why you're dismissing it so cleanly there.
I haven't heard it mentioned once in the last 2 weeks.
Rammer, one thing that I've noticed over the last period of time is how difficult it is to be a Melbourne supporter. I've heard about it. I've heard about the agony they go through, the stress, the dislike for their own team, despite supporting them. Jeez, they're hard to follow. Oh, gosh.
Well, let's start there while we're talking about the Bees and the form ladder. Because it was a very, very important game for both teams. In fact, a couple of games across the weekend, Jim, were important for both teams. There's a bit on the line for a couple of games. A couple of one-sided affairs, which didn't mean too much. But there was a couple that really did have some weighting behind it. This was certainly one of those. It was Alice Springs on Saturday night, TIO Traeger Park. And it was we had a brief conversation about it yesterday, Jim. I think it was a win for the coach's box of the Demons in that game against St Kilda. Because on paper and on form, as we discussed Friday on the Friday Footy Preview, you would have thought St Kilda should win that game. But Melbourne found a way to stop St Kilda, particularly in that first half, outside of the last 3 minutes of the second quarter, particularly in that first half. The coach's box battle, or the plan in place by Melbourne, was a very, very good one.
Yeah, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Half, and I've heard you speak about this, and you got to tip your cap to the coaching staffs when they do well, because, geez, when they don't, they come under all sorts of pressure, don't they? They threaten with getting sacked by the general public and the media alike. But I agree with you. They stopped St Kilda's run and dash from half-back, that flowing 100-metre plays, 150-metre plays from half-back where you create the overlap. And then you think of Membry and these sort of guys working inside forward 50, almost being able to back lead, side lead, having all that space. But Melbourne were able to stop that. And the amount of times during the game where you saw the Saints actually win possession, but then go back slow off the mark. Now, it's one thing to have the plan, but then you have to execute it. I think in the first sort of three quarters, still it was anyone's game. It was like both sides had beautifully set up walls across half back, and the game was just like that the old Brickle game, doot, 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 like just going back and forth from the two half back lines. But I think what Melbourne did a bit better than St Kilda is their pressure on the ball carrier and the kicker, which allowed Stephen May to have such an impact he did. Now, he played on a young key forward, but you need pressure on the ball carrier as well. Like, we didn't see too many Saints players coming through the middle and having a lot of time and space to find those players in that launch zone from 70 metres out forward, Rammer.
In the end, that was the difference. I thought Stephen May, albeit Petrarca, 20 possessions, 4 goals. Stephen May, I think he had 12 intercept possessions for the game. Max King couldn't at least even halve those contests. That was the issue, where he couldn't then allow St Kilda's smalls to come to life in that forward half of the ground. So Stephen May would mark or take the ball away, and it'll just go back the other way. Whereas St Kilda in the past, you talk about that speed, Jim, that they've had from half-back, but they've all also been manic inside their forward half, where they didn't have that opportunity really to own territory too much. When a player is so dominant, and we saw that a couple of weeks ago with Jeremy McGovern over in West Coast with his intercept marking and possessions, it becomes really, really difficult for your small forwards to be involved in the game.
Yeah, and probably one change, and I know it wouldn't have been, probably wouldn't have even changed the effect, but I would have liked to see is someone like I know Nick Hind, I know he's not a big possession getter, but at least try him at half back. So, and with the instruction, if we intercept the footy, can you loop around the back or can you be that handball receiver? Because he's so quick over the first 10 metres, he can shorten that defence. So, look, you want to try and catch out where you're kicking the ball over Stephen May and Max King's head. So you'd say to King and May that matchup, can you play a lot higher? And then you try and carry the ball and get them really short. And then you get your better matchup deep inside forward 50. Does that make sense how I'm explaining that?
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that what you're saying there from a security perspective was the way that Melbourne defended that, Jim, was the reason why they struggled. Because normally teams would press up. If the Saints are coming out from halfback, they'd press up and try and restrict them into their defensive half. But Melbourne said, you can have that free player back there. That's fine. We're just going to stand still, and you're going to have to get past us. And that took away that ability to leapfrog and overlap, handball and run and carry. It was actually really, really clever in the first half. Now, because then when they got possession back, the D's, they took all the energy out of the game. It was kick mark. Secure to want the game in flow. They want a transition goal. Three of their first half goals out of the four they kicked were transition goals. Melbourne kicked four of the first five half goals is from stoppage goals. So that wasn't sustainable. So they took the speed out of the game and didn't allow St Kilda what they wanted, which was a bit of chaos, a bit of manic play, which is more their bread and butter this year. So I thought it was a bloody good plan. In the end, in the second half of the game, Ram, it was just more of a war of attrition because it was difficult conditions for the players to get through. It was just an arm wrestle to see who can hang on the longest in the end.
And I do understand what Whitey's talking about earlier, being a Melbourne supporter, because it looked like the most likely in that last quarter was going to be St Kilda. Inside 50s ended up 30-46 in St Kilda's favour. And that's what I talk about with Stephen May, how he played that game. Tactically, what you're saying, Half, is, and Jim, is absolutely spot on. But he was just a wall there, Whitey.
Yeah, we'll talk to Max Gawn about this tomorrow. But it seemed that Melbourne was so fixated with what they were doing to stop St Kilda playing it the way it wanted to, that at times they forgot that they had to score themselves. So it was really just a case of trying to hold on in that last quarter. But the ramifications on this game are fascinating. If you look at the top eight at the moment, seven of the eight teams in the top eight have lost only, or you've got it in front of you, Half, but seven of the top eight teams have only lost one of their last five games.
Right. Seven of the top eight teams have lost one of their last five games.
Yep, or in the case of Geelong, have won all of their last five, but St Kilda sticks out that they've actually lost three of their last four, but three of their last five. So when we talk about a form ladder, Half, that you mentioned, St Kilda's the vulnerable one just based on their form. And I guess the question I've got for you guys is it a case of St Kilda needing a break because they've got the break this round? They don't play until next week and they're getting a bit tired because they've done a lot of work in their fixture, having to travel to Adelaide on consecutive times and all that sort of thing from Queensland, where they're staying. Or is it a case that people have kind of worked them out as to how to play and have taken away their strength?
I think, Jim, it just gives you a bit of a chance to tweak the things that, you know, that you're worrying about. Like, because teams aren't having that time during the week where they really get out there and are able to really to practice some sort of part of their game that they need to improve quickly. With a little break now for the Saints, they can go back, have a look at things closely, okay, go out and train a few things differently, and you might just see some subtle changes, Jim, in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you can do a bit of that structural training that you're talking about there, Rammer. And most importantly, and you heard Brett Ratton in the press conference afterwards when they asked him about the goal line review. He goes, well, we've got other issues because when you've got three players behind the ball and Petrarca gets the ball in the middle of them, now, brilliant play from Petrarca. Let's not overlook that. But one of the three should at least come over and intercept the footy or kill it wide to a boundary. And then at worst, yeah, the ball, not have the ball just drop at Petrarca's feet so he can spin around and tackle it. Everything that you didn't want to happen, they did in that situation. And then you can work on that ball movement stuff. And it's a bit about Melbourne as well. Oliver obviously leading possession, get it with 26. But it's all defenders or mids who play back in the next 10. So Langdon, who gets a long way back on the wing, is next. But it's May, Salem, Hibbard, Rivers are your next possession getters. It's inviting the opposition at you. Now, another side might capitalise, and Melbourne's got to make that decision how far they sit back and defend, because we've seen the modern game is defenders defending higher for forward half intercepts. But Melbourne certainly played to their strengths, which was their half back line and their backs, who are very good at winning the footy. So I think for both, it's in where they go from this game. Does Melbourne double down on this system, which is you're inviting the pressure, and other sides, the top sides like Port Adelaide, Geelong, Richmond, West Coast could probably expose that sort of defence? And for the Saints, how do you work your way through when sides try and slow you down from half-back?
So for the Saints, they've got the bye this week, as Whitey said, then they've got Hawthorn, West Coast and the Giants to finish.
Yeah. They need to win two of those three halves.
They need to win two of their last three.
Yeah. The Giants betting Fremantle was a bad result for St Kilda. That wasn't too, and even Collingwood winning wasn't a great result for St Kilda either, because it just puts them in this wash of teams now. And they've played 14. So they're in 7th and they've played 14, but if you look below them, Melbourne have only played 13, the Giants have only played 13, the Bulldogs 14. Played 14, and then Essendon and Carlton have only played 13. So on the ladder, they look relatively safe, St Kilda, because they're a game inside with a fairly good percentage, but they can be eaten up fairly quickly without playing with the Demons, the Giants, and I mean, I'm not sure whether you can throw Essendon in, to be honest, but if you do throw Essendon in, they're all teams that have got a game less or played a game less at this point.
I wouldn't think you'd throw Essendon in. Melbourne, by the way, have got Sydney, Fremantle, the Giants and Essendon on the way home. So they're very, very winnable games that if you're half a decent team, you should be winning at least half of those, possibly three.
Yeah, but I think half Melbourne needs to rely on some results going their way.
I'm not so sure.
I know we'll get to Collingwood Carlton shortly, half, but who's Collingwood got on the way home?
Collingwood have got Brisbane this week, and then they've got the bye, and Gold Coast and Port Adelaide. So tough. Brisbane and Port Adelaide's tough. Gold Coast were very good yesterday, which we'll get to at some stage, but
that Carlton game season.
So important. Yeah, exactly.
So, 6, 7, 8 are not by no means locked in yet on that ladder.
No, they're not. They're not. But that's what I'm saying. With teams like Melbourne and the Giants, they're still going to have to rely on, I think, results going their way because they play each other. So, you know, they're really... It'd be very handy if Collingwood, you know, didn't win. I mean, I'm only stating the obvious, but they can't... They're not quite in that situation where they control their own destiny because of who everybody else plays, which goes to Jimmy's point. When you play each other once, this is what's created a much more even season.
I think the Magpies only need one more win. I reckon 9.5 will get them in.
One?
Yep.
9.5 will get them in.
The draw will be the key.
Yeah.
9.5 will get them in. So they've got to beat the Gold Coast, I reckon. That's the game they could set themselves for. After the bye, they can freshen up and go hard in round 17 against the Gold Coast. Let's have a chat about the Pies and the Blues yesterday. Whitey, I know you were angling towards it early in the show this morning.
Yeah.
Jim, you were covering for Channel 7 yesterday. Mm-hmm. Whitey, I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, I was really keen to talk to Jimmy about this because Carlton had a lead at half time and were playing the better footy in the first half. And then they had a period of play for about, I reckon, 10, maybe even 12 minutes in that third term where they completely dominated play and they couldn't put it on the scoreboard. They had plenty of inside 50s. They had plenty of situations where they were forward of centre under little pressure and the skill execution wasn't there. It looked to me of a team that realised, geez, our season's on the line here and we could win this. And they kind of froze under that pressure of finishing off. It was like a young tennis player coming through that had the break of serve and was trying to serve out the set, and they just couldn't do it. And in the end, they allowed Collingwood back into the contest, and away Collingwood went, who kind of knows how to win because of the experience they've got at doing it. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's really fair, Whitey. And I think I've mentioned this about Carlton throughout the year when they've had some losses, is they're doing this transition from being a poor side for quite some time to being a good side, and where they are on the ladder. And it looked a bit of that maturity and, I guess, game knowledge and awareness, which David Teague's done a really good job in fast-tracking as much as possible, because they've had some good wins. But you see in their losses, they're all... you go to the Port Adelaide loss there at the Gabba. It was just all decision-making, where we need to go, where we need to be with the ball, game awareness, game situation sort of stuff. And when Carlton were on top and winning the footy, as you mentioned, that third quarter, it was the selection coming inside forward 50. And we've spoken about, even just referring to Melbourne just before, you know, sides in that part of the ladder, what they don't do well is that last kick inside forward 50. Now, what separates just the average sides to the top sides is that decision-making forward to centre, when to go long, then when to hit the one coming up short, but it's also the type of kicks. Now, early in the game, Carlton missed a massive opportunity even in the first quarter when they had plenty of free ball, but they just dumped it. You know, when you've got so many tools, you've still got to kick it to their advantage to give them an opportunity. Collingwood were the same. Collingwood had five blokes over 500 centimetres tall yesterday. They were the world's biggest side. But it wasn't until the second half where they actually started to kick it a little bit flatter into Mason Cox forward of the footy, that he was actually able to take some sort of advantage of his height. I think people, when they see the guy size of a tree, they kick it right up a chimney. Now, that just plays into the defence's hand. They just all start peeling off. You become predictable. But Carlton had just to work out that balance of when you hit up the lead to when you take long the contest. That's just how I saw it, Rammer. I just saw it more as an execution. And I think a side going from making that transition from a poor side to the good side, they're going to have that fluctuation throughout games.
Yeah, and you almost, it's those, I guess, heartbreakers that you have to go through as a team to become good. It's how you come out the other side of those heartbreakers. Now, I want to see them really bounce back next week, the Blues. But look, you look at the last quarter in isolation, the half, seven of the top 10 possession winners were all Collingwood players. Yeah. You know, their ability to control the tempo and flow of the game in that last quarter was really, really important. Carlton really couldn't get on top around that contest. They couldn't get that territory battle, which Collingwood won, like in that last quarter particularly, where the ball seemed in their forward half of the ground. I was waiting in that last quarter for Collingwood to take over, and they eventually did take over. I know it took them to, you know, the final couple of minutes, but I didn't feel like Carlton were the team that were pushing hard enough to win that last quarter. Collingwood looked more dangerous at ground level. Jim mentioned those taller type players. Well, you know, Cox, Mychek started to get on top, but then you look inside forward 50, Tyler Brown had a good game. Stevenson looked like he was back to some sort of form. Dacos kicks the sealer. Thomas, you know, those guys at ground level, when the ball was on the ground wide, I felt the difference in that last quarter.
Yeah, they had the game breakers. And I think the great thing for Collingwood is that Josh Dacos now falls into that category. He's elevated his game, and it's not just the skills, it's when he's executing. He kicked the winning goal against Sydney. Mm. He kicks a really important goal against Carlton. And the interesting thing about Collingwood is that it's 2 weeks in a row now they've played pretty ordinary football. But when the game needed to be won against North Melbourne and against Carlton, they finished off like a good team. And we think about them being out of form. They've won four of their last five. It's just the reality of who they've played against. And they wouldn't have beaten a lot of teams based on that form, but they had a good draw and they've profited from it.
Yeah, and it's probably a conversation we've had a lot here is I think when they actually started to focus a little bit on their attack, they actually defended better. I know all we hear from coaches and you know, the footy speak is, oh, we've got to defend hard, and things like that. But Nathan Buckley at halftime said, we've got to be a bit braver, but also start looking for it with our ball use. And what they did was, I noticed a lot, they didn't sit as far back. So when Carlton brings up the likes of Gibbons to a stoppage as a high half forward, as you notice a lot, that half forward comes up to the stoppage. Early in the game, Collingwood would sit that defender a little bit deeper, which almost encouraged everyone to sit deeper. And this has been, I think, for me, the shift in Collingwood with, you know, call it their form slump mid part of the year. They sit too deep across half back. Their mids then come back to half back. So when they do rebound it, they still have a very good defensive side, but they got nothing on the way out. So what they did is they brought Crisp and Maynard up really high, which they call contest coverage. So a pitcher, a throw in, where the wing normally sits, sweeper, sitting about 4 metres back inside, they brought the defender up. So that was Crisp or Maynard, which actually encouraged the Collingwood midfielders going, well, I've got the extra cover there. I can go forward at the stoppage. So Elliott, Pendlebury, these sort of guys, Dacos. So if we get it, I've got plenty of cover. But also if they turned it over, they're in a really good pattern to start running, or they get a really good space to start running to start that transition out. So the second half, Crisp, Maynard, Quainer. Quainer ended up with 20 touches. Crisp ended up with 25. Maynard ended up with 18. They were all relatively quiet to half time, but they had huge amounts of possession in the second half. And that brings Dacos into the game because, you know, these guys are actually forcing Dacos to win the ball forward to centre. So it's that overlap knock-on effect. So it was actually attacking and wanting to attack a bit more and be a bit more creative actually helped them defend better because it got them all up higher on the ground in that territory game.
They got used the width of the Gabba much better than the Blues did too, particularly in the second half. Their wingers and their higher forwards on the transition, Jim, they're always on the open side, and Carlton just let it happen way too often. And I think, back to your initial point, Whitey, they're just not ready, the Blues. I'm just not sure they're fully believing that they're good enough come the moment. And 4 points in the second half they kicked yesterday. They can probably kick 5 goals, 6. It was a panting in the end. The way that Collingwood got really good looks going inside forward 50 because they opened the ground up, whereas Carlton played safe and narrow and short and tried to find ways through the numbers. Collingwood went around them with width and speed, and I thought that was the difference in the end.
And there's obviously always two ways you can look at a game. It's statistically and it's a moment-based game. There's two parts to it. And in Carlton's case yesterday, Rammer, it was a moment-based situation for them where it was just hard hands to a mark that was dropped at 45 metres out. It was the wrong option when they had other options they could have gone to. My view is that the key word in all of that is composure under pressure. It's composure. And they just didn't have it. And Collingwood just found a way in the second half to have that composure.
Don't you understand the Magpies there with it? They're better than finding a way. They're a good team.
No, I don't mean
football.
Finding a way. Good teams find a way. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that they were necessarily searching for it. That they had that experience of knowing how to win because they've won a lot of games over the last few years. So that it sort of comes that emerges under pressure, doesn't it? The good players lift and the better teams win often in a close game in that situation.
So you can be. You can have the best systems, the best structure, the best whatever you like. But if you can't execute the basics in pressure moments, it all goes out the door. All goes out the door. So that doesn't really matter. But what I want to ask the three of you guys, Carlton will get some players back, obviously, next season. You know, Curnow will come back, who's a really important player to them. But if you're sitting there as Carlton's list manager right at the moment, what do you think is the one area of the ground they need to continue to focus on to improve? Because they look like they're going to be a good team.
Yeah.
Ooh, good question.
Yeah. Well, that is a good question.
I'd like another inside mid. I just think they hate hearing it, but it's still a little bit Crips or bust inside. The knock-on effect he has for other players, when he started to roll a little bit and get his hands on the footy, others float off the back. I think Setterfield started the game pretty well inside, but I'm still not saying he will be, but I'm still not sure he's the long-term future as an inside mid. I think he's played his better footy out on the wing. That's for me. I think they've got enough options forward and back.
They're, give me Zach Williams. They've got
Egan.
As you're another halfback. Williams.
Yep, running and using halfback. That's what I want.
Sorry, Jimmy. I think they need midfielders. They need midfielders. Mark Murphy's coming towards the end. Ed Curnow's in sort of the back end of his career. A lot of those early draft picks that they've had where they've used for midfielders, they haven't quite come on. You know, Paddy Dow's an example of that. Liam Stocker, I know he's in his second year, but they've targeted they needed to thicken that midfield, but those players haven't necessarily developed because Paddy Cripps needs help, but they also need some outside run in the midfield as well, I think.
Yeah, I reckon if they can get Martin up and running to play a little bit more midfield minutes going 50-50 split, half, because half-half, you know, he plays half the time, half. Half-half, because 30% of their scoring chains go through him. So it just shows how dangerous he is in those attacking chains. And it provides that balance, I guess. If you've got Cripps, Martin and another, you've got a good little mix.
Yep. Let's get to a break, boys. We'll come back and talk more about the round that was, round 14 action. Looking forward to finding out what Jimmy thinks about the Cats, the Giants, the Tigers, and a bit of the power action as well, because they did their job on the weekend against the lowly Swans at the moment, who are struggling in season 2020. But a bit to get through, not to mention what the Kangaroos failed to do against the Gold Coast Suns last night. Still to come on The Breakfast Club.
Across this sporting state, RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
It wasn't good enough. It's not an acceptable performance. That's what it is. I think the only thing that can really happen now is what the response is, really, because that's essentially where it sits. I'm a bit at a loss, really. I think it's this week's going to show a lot and tell us a lot about what they want to do.
A fairly disconsolate Rhys Shaw you could hear after the game yesterday against the Gold Coast Suns. The Kangaroos went down by 63 points, and that's friendly on the scoreboard. They were absolutely walloped. That's a paddling, as they say in The Simpsons. 91 to 28, 12 goals, 19 from the Suns yesterday. 12-19 to 4-4. It was an absolute shambles, the Kangaroos. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but just get you guys take on the performance. A from the Suns, another good win from the Suns, a positive outcome for them. 5.5 wins for the year from them, which has been a good result. The first win for a little while as well, which is nice to get for them, reward for effort. But the Kangaroos were deplorable, Jim.
Yeah, just touching on the Suns, save for a belting themselves coming home, I think this is probably the first year where we've gone with the Suns going, oh, tick, forward momentum, where every other year has been, ugh, that's been a disaster. What was that? but I think the positives for the Suns is that I think we've learned a lot about this group, that they don't go away. They keep having a crack. They're super competitive. They've re-signed a number of their young players. They've played out a year. I know we've got shorter quarters and shorter season, but you can only do what's in front of you. And they've got a bit of grit about them, and they're trying to play to a system. When we watch the Suns, we know they're trying to move the ball quick. They're trying to overlap. They're starting with the contest inside. And they've got a good balance, actually. We spoke about sides before with their balance of midfield and the players just on the periphery of half-forwards and half-backs. But, you know, like Anderson, Ainsworth, I think, had probably his best game for the Suns. Do you know his first nine touches were score involvements in the game?
That's a good result.
That's good. That's being highly effective as a half-forward. That's as effective as you can get. So a big bonus. It's good for footy that the Suns at least we could probably put a tick on the season. But North Melbourne, I just don't know where you start. And the thing is, you touched on the fundamentals before, Rama, and I know with the big soft cap cut coming to all clubs, 30%, you sometimes wonder it actually affects the clubs who don't have all the money or down the bottom of the ladder, because you'd like to just invest in more coaching to help Rhys Shaw.
No doubt. Yeah, absolutely no doubt. When you've got a developing team that you want to continue to improve week in, week out, yeah, having less coaches is not going to help. You know, that takes a lot of the responsibility back on the players, Whitey.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question about North Melbourne. Their midfield was clearly an issue last night. Their best players, if you like, through the midfield, Higgins only had 13 disposals, but he played out on a wing for a lot of the night. DeMond only had 16, Simkin only had 16, Jared Pollock sitting in the stands. My question is, at what point is this a real risky situation for Rhys Shaw? I know he's trying to make a point with Pollock, but not playing him, because it looks like a lot of the senior players look very tired. I wouldn't say disinterested, I'll just use the word tired, but when it's not about them and it's about the future, what is he running a bit of a risk reshoring, not necessarily losing the players, but the way they played, even Todd Goldstein, a lot of the older guys just, I don't know whether it's just tired or whether they seemed a bit disillusioned. Because at the end of the day, it was 5-11 to 4 behinds after halftime. 31 scoring shots to 8 for the match. Gold Coast Suns aren't playing finals.
Well, neither are the Kangaroos. And it looked a bit like that the way North Melbourne were playing. It was the checked out factor.
Yeah.
Like yes.
Just mail it in and let's just wrap this season up and do what we need to do. But the Pollock one's an interesting one. And I don't sort of disagree. Like, I don't know what his plan is with Reece, you know, Reece Shaw's plan for the Kangaroos, but if you're committed to something, like, would he have made the difference of the way they played, Pollock? So just playing him because he's a good player and you've paid him a lot of money doesn't make sense at this time of the year if you're trying to make a statement or a point to the broader playing list. So,
but my point is that dangerous to the overall culture of the team? That they're leaving him out to make a point. Is it or not? I don't know.
But the danger could be if the point is clear to everyone the way he wants to play by playing him. So we don't know the point he's trying to make there at the Kangaroos. Now, it could be actually having a positive effect to a lot of others. Well, it didn't show on the weekend, but by leaving him out and sticking strong to your guns.
Yep. I'm all in that camp. Must admit, I don't know the story, what's going on there, but more dangerous to lose the playing group if you know there's a problem and you continue to let it happen.
Mm. Yep.
You could hear the disappointment in Reece Shaw's voice after the game, but I think as a supporter, you probably want to hear a little bit more. Like, you want to hear probably about the... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think so, a little bit.
Well, they don't give you too much in terms of whys and hows and press conferences.
Like, Reece only in his first year, so he's inexperienced, but I think that would have been a good thing to sit there and just talk about it. Talk about what was happening, what's happening with the team and what's going to be moving into the future and you know, just give your supporters a little bit.
I was a bit like that half. They're in a situation, we know they're not going to play finals, but say, for example, they got smacked in contested ball by a young, energetic side. Maybe he said, look, we got belted, you know, around the contest, and the next couple of weeks, I'm going to find out which guys are going to consistently give me what I need around the contest, or else next year we're going to look for guys. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be deep analytics, but just tell us what the frustration is. Yeah.
Right, well, that's the Kangaroos and the Gold Coast. Neither of those teams are playing finals at this stage. So let's have a look at one team that might. Your boys, Jim, the GWS Giants, who found a bit of groove on the weekend. You talk about statistical categories that they were up on. They had a good number of uncontested possessions up on Fremantle, plus 66, I think it was, for the game, let alone the plus 9 inside 50s and all that sort of stuff. They found a little bit of their groove, and White is excited. Jim, what did you see from your Giants?
Whitey is big Kev, isn't he? He's excited. I think if you use one player to sort of encapsulate a bit, it's Lachie Whitfield. Now, dominant game from him, but it was more when he received the ball, he's made his decision on the move. You think against the Swans game, even first half against West Coast, he received the footy, went back behind the mark, looked around, threw the hands up, went, no one's moving, let's kick it long down the line, and they got hurt on the counter. So he just got them going. They wheeled and go. They played a little bit quicker. They were prepared to make mistakes by moving the ball. But you don't actually make as many mistakes as you think you're going to make when you play on it and take that sort of risk, as some players think. And they just had better movement for the footy and had a bit more energy and intensity with the way they went about defending it as well. And Jake Riccardi, how good was he? Four to the footy.
Four snags for Jake.
He's actually got some, watching a lot of him, you know, in his footage at Werribee, but also early at the Giants. He's actually got some pretty good footy IQ for a key forward. He knows how to work at the footy, whether to come up with a kicker. But when he doesn't get it, how he quickly readjusts and finds his new position inside forward 50.
So I know, Jimmy, it's one game, and it's against Fremantle, who are a struggling team. But at the end of the day, Fremantle defensively are very good structurally. And so it was always a test for the Giants to see whether they could actually play a positive brand of footy against that sort of, you know, defensive mechanism. So is that all they needed? The one game, now they know what it looks like to move the ball quicker and all the things that you mentioned? Or is it still very much a work in progress? Because we've all been talking about Leon Cameron needing to flick the switch or need to pull the lever. Was it pulled, or do you still think, nah, there's a long way to go?
I hope it's both, Whitey. I hope that's not avoiding it. I hope by seeing how effective it can be, it can lead to long-term, I guess, improved form. Because, yeah, they're still going to improve if you're going to match it with the big boys. And the Giants are there to try and win a premiership. So by seeing it, that does give players confidence. It gives them faith in what they're doing has an effect. And then you can coach it. Rama talked about coaching, you can show a lot more of those positive edits of where you're doing it well. Look, see, you've done it well for a sustained period. So that's the first bit of your question. But they still need to keep improving to be the side that, well, they've got the potential to be.
You talk about Whitfield, Whitey, but like Jeremy Cameron, he's kicked 4 goals and had 18 possessions. When he's moving and when he's active, the Giants look a lot better because there's more targets. So Riccardi comes into the game and takes more marks. Obviously Himmelberg's there. Toby Green's there. So you got more options.
Yeah, but hang on a sec. He's been playing the whole time, Jeremy. It's amazing how much better. It's amazing how much better he plays when they move the ball quickly and give their forwards a chance.
Yeah, but Cameron came right up the ground on Saturday. If you look at his heat map from that game, he's everywhere on the ground. He didn't plonk himself inside forward 50 and try to out-muscle and out-mark. He got on his bike and started to move. And I think that's when Cameron plays his best football, because he's a lot fitter than a lot of his key defenders that he plays against, Jim.
And he's a key forward who likes both space behind and in front. We've seen a lot of good key forwards. Yeah. So you think Ben Brown from Kangaroos, he's a key forward who uses all the space in front of him. So, like, he comes back to the goal square. He's like one of those wind-up cars where he goes, zit, 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 and he goes, like, forward all the time. That's his leading patterns. Whereas, you know, some forwards, they like to be start a little bit higher because they can use the back space. They try and work their defenders going, am I going behind you? Am I coming up in front of you? Am I going to turn you around? So he's one of those. But I think the ball movement moving a bit quicker means then he's not running into crowded numbers when he's going up and turning them around.
So the Giants, their last 4 games, Carlton, Adelaide, Melbourne and St Kilda. They currently sit 7 wins, 6 losses. Their percentage is 101 up against teams ahead of them. Melbourne 111 and St Kilda 113. So they get that percentage opportunity against Adelaide, obviously, but they've got tiebreaker games against clearly Melbourne and St Kilda. You can even throw in that game against Carlton next week.
Well, only one person needs to be answered, and it's none of us. It's Mr. Form Ladder. That settles all things. Where did the Giants sit on your form ladder then, Huff?
So the Giants will... They've had the 7th hardest ranked draw to this point, and they've got their 9th on the table. So they're sitting... That could put them in the 8th, Jim. 7 and 9, 8 in between. They'll be sniffing. They'll miss out by percentage, I reckon. That's what I think.
Oh, boy. Is that what you think or form ladder thinks?
Well, we're not a combination of both of us.
The form ladder.
But the combination of both of us.
But that's why I asked the question. But, Daniel, that's why I asked the question about the Giants, because, you know, they coughed and spluttered their way through a lot of last season and then got it going just in time. It could be a bit the same for them this year as well. And I just, you know, based, again, I know it was against Fremantle, but it was more the way they played. Taranto was better, Hopper was better, Cornelio was better. They didn't have Kelly in the second half. I just think there was a lot to like about that.
Giants might have found some groove. We'll see. We will see. Port Adelaide, you know, finished the season with the Kangaroos, the Bombers and the Magpies. They are finishing on top of the ladder, and they will be the best team in football in the home and away season, yet no one considers them a premiership contender. They did the job against the Swans on the weekend, Jim, expected, 26 points in the end, and apart from a disappointing third quarter, I think it was, where the Swans sort of shut down their run, they really did control that from start to finish.
Yeah, and I'm hearing that Adelaide and the Adelaide Oval is putting a very good submission in for the grand final. So
they should.
Don't think it's just the Gabatoir locked away. They'll get a home final, at least, probably the Port Adelaide pair. But what they've done is, I think, just quietly, Bell Park Ken has just slowly just adjusted the midfield mix and midfield minutes, and I think it helps. Robbie Gray looks fit. I know he's played just almost as a permanent forward for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But, he's had some injury issues as well, so that's played into the fact that he's just been parked out of the goal square. But he looks to be moving really well again. So his midfield minutes in the last couple of weeks, Pau Pepper's midfield minutes, those two swapping over. And, yeah, they did what they had to do against an undermanned Swans, and also the Swans, you know, swinging the magnets around. John Longmire playing blokes in different positions. But just they've just been quietly working on a few things, the Port Adelaide pair.
Well, Robbie Gray had 11 disposals and kicked 2 goals in the first quarter. It was a fairly handy start.
Dominant.
Yeah. Dominant. Big Charlie was dominant. Their mids were dominant. So, yeah, there's I don't mind the Swans, Whitey. I don't mind the Swans. I think there's some players there that they can really work with in the future. Look, they obviously need a bit more, but I think there's a bit to work with the Swans. I'm okay with the Swannies.
Yep. Yeah, they've got that mix of good young players, and it's quite a bit of depth to that mix. The interesting thing, guys, I wanted to ask you about Port Adelaide, the importance of having the likes of Westhoff and Marshall down there to help Dixon, so it's not too predictable where they just kick it long to Charlie. I think I reckon Marshall's a bit underrated in that sense. I'm not saying he gets a lot of the footy, but they've got different looks now going forward rather than, you know, too many times, I reckon, in the last month, they kick long to Charlie and he's got about 6 blokes hanging off him. I think they're a bit less predictable, even though Charlie kicked 4, with having those other guys there.
Yeah, and that's why I thought, even though he's a first-year player, the inclusion of Georgiades was important, because at least with those other two you mentioned, they're probably a little bit more consistent with the playing a lot more footy than Georgiades, but playing that second or third tall role, because, you know, when they play the two rucks, the other ruck goes forward, so that's the second or third tall forward. Because even when the big Chaz has a big game, he's not a big bag goal kicker. He kicks 2s and 3s, but provides a big contest. So that other forward, if they can kick 2, there's your 5 from your key post in the shortened game.
Yep, the Chaz is going well. Power going well. They'll finish on top and do what they like in the finals. Wherever that is played, as you say, Jim, a bit of a sniff coming out of Adelaide that they are going hard as they can for the grand final. We'll see what happens. In fact, tomorrow the commissioner meeting, so we should know tomorrow night or Wednesday where the grand final will be played. We'll get to a break, come back, talk about the Cats and the Tigers, and what happens if you're a Bulldogs fan after the weekend. Boy, oh boy, that would have been disappointing Friday night. Even though Patrick Dangerfield got most contested positions for the Friday face-off for the great man. Yeah, baby! We'll get to a break. Fresh with more. Yes, absolutely. Welcome aboard. Great to have you company. Jimmy Bartel, our Monday review specialist. What a champion he is and was, but certainly still is now. And he used to do that dominance for the Cats. Now, the Cats' Friday night performance was quite remarkable, Jim. At halftime, they were down by
a lot.
36 goals.
36 points at one stage there, Daniel Sun.
36 points through the second term. And then they found a way to peg it back to 18 at halftime. It looked like it was almost game, set, match. They were getting absolutely mauled by the Dogs in just about every facet of the game. But like a good team, Jim, you bite off. It's like eating an elephant, that sort of situation they found themselves in at quarter time when they're 6 goals down. You eat an elephant one bite at a time. You don't go in and try and eat it all in one go. It's one bite at a time. And the Cats took that mentality into the rest of that game.
Whereabouts are you starting half on that elephant? You starting the trunk or an ear or?
Oh no, back, right, no, hind on the back. I'm getting some real meat early doors. I'm getting in the chewy stuff early.
you slow them down. But when you look at the final numbers, and now look, we've got to say this because Dog supporters get very upset. I know you had 2 down. I acknowledge that, but it was the way the Cats were playing that completely overwhelmed you in the end. And anytime I mention the Cats as premiership favourites, everyone goes, oh, you got your Geelong Cats pyjamas on, you loser. But they're actually playing this year would be one, I think, which they'd probably, if they didn't win the premiership, they'd be a little bit worried. It'd probably hurt a little bit more because their young players, I've touched on this, aren't really that young anymore. Like Parfit, O'Connor, Henry, they're all at the 50 games. Even Close, who comes in, is 22 years of age. He's played SANFL footy. They're going to add back Selwood, that the little baldy man, Gary Ablett, comes back into that side as well. They've got experience, they've got the balance. And what they've tidied up this year from, which hurt them in recent years in big finals, is their clearance work. Now, Reece Stanley playing some good footy helps that, but they're not getting scored against on clearances, and they've got that differential in their favour quite significantly. So that helps with Guthrie and Menegola, who are probably playing as good a footy as they've ever played. So they've actually tidied up the area where which got them beaten in finals, and you know probably got them touched up in games, in big games, is the clearance and scores from clearances. So I think they're a much more balanced side. Blitzars is obviously playing a few more roles, but they're just so settled and so disciplined. The Cats, I said this, don't beat themselves. You've got to play really good footy to beat them across the whole entire course of the game. They'll stick to the system.
Isn't it amazing, Whitey, when Geelong were forced to go quick after quarter time, they look untouchable. Oh, the Dogs simply thought they had done enough in that first quarter, and they just went to sleep really after that. But Geelong then were for, because Geelong wanted to play this system game in the first quarter and lock it down and control tempo. Then when they were forced to really throw caution to the wind, really for the remainder of the game, Whitey, they looked brilliant. Yeah.
But what they can do, Geelong, is that they can solve their own problems. So they actually knew at quarter time what they'd done incorrectly. And so when they went to that break, it was reaffirmed by the coaches at quarter time. But they went, yeah, we probably overcorrected a little bit. We knew what the Bulldogs were going to do, and we kind of let them do it. And then when they woke from their slumber, they were fantastic. But please, we have to actually talk about Patrick Dangerfield, because he did put the Superman cape on at quarter time. He had 30 disposals after quarter time. And he said, all right, boys, come with me. And that's what happened. And he was incredible.
He was amazing.
Yep.
Hey, no, Jim, I've got one for you.
Absolutely brilliant.
Oh.
Ablett and Selwood still have to come back into this team.
Yeah.
What will the final makeup of the Geelong team come finals time look like? Because that was a very strong team on Friday night, and there's still some good players sitting in the reserves, Fogarty, Constable, to name a couple. Jordan Clark, who's missing? Because Ablett and Selwood are coming in.
Yeah, well, Narkle's another one too that they love to play whenever he's fit and ready. But I think Clark can push his way back into the side because he provides a point of difference to their back six. But I don't think Fogarty and Constable come in. It's more probably, you know, whether Close holds his spot, you know, for Gary to come back in, because half forward for half forward, that's just doing the like for like, Gary playing across half forward, Close probably being there. Yeah, because they like to play Atkins. Atkins has now had over 30 games experience and provides that tackling forward pressure on the forward line. I guess, you know, Selwood just plays, doesn't he? But I don't know, with injuries and things like that, who goes out at this stage.
Is Jack Stephen vulnerable?
He's been playing some good footy in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm struggling to look who comes out of that team.
And this is my point that... Yeah, well, Close comes out for one of them.
And Gary comes out. Gary goes in for him. That's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, Gary goes in for Close.
I don't know who Joel comes in for. I don't know who Joel comes in for, but he's coming in.
Now that might be a defender or something. It just depends who they're coming up against. It might be a tall defender that just goes out, and you add an extra one to your midfield mix. So that, you know, whether you go Henderson and Taylor in the same. So it just depends who you're playing, of course, where you take the extra one out. But that's a bit of my point too, Rammer, of why the Cats are so dangerous. They've just got depth and experience.
Yeah, I agree.
It's also been a mastery performance from them in managing their team. And, you know, we've talked about Dangerfield, who had a few weeks where he played forward. You know, he seems a bit fresher. They've got the bye this week or the break this week. So that's come at the right time for them. They come back with three games and can consolidate themselves in the top four, and away they go.
They're the only team in the game, I reckon, that have modes of play that can be effective. Yes. Every single mode they've got is effective. I think that's the difference between them and every other team.
They're not playing a final at the G.
You know, the point on that half, which I think is really important, is that they've got different modes of play, but they've also got ways that they can counter the opposition, but they've also got offensive ways that the opposition can't cope with when they're flying. So it's on both sides.
Sort of what I mean. Their modes, offensive and defensively, are really effective against any style. It seems.
They've got Richmond in round 17. That could determine nothing because of the neutral territory of home finals, but it could also potentially determine lots of things based on where home finals are played. If West Coast get into the top two, or Port Adelaide get that top spot to make sure that they're... Yeah, and it's a really big on that one.
Yeah, and it's only really an injury or maybe Tom Hawkins having a brain fade that'll stop him.
All right, well, there's a bit more to get our teeth into because we get a festival footy continuing tomorrow. Did you know, Jim? Two games tomorrow to kick off around 15 as we roll through the next little while to get as many games in as quickly as possible. Jim, great to chat to you as always on a Monday. We look forward to catching up with you next Monday.
I've enjoyed it and had fun.
Get your cat's pyjamas off. For Jimmy Bartel, Triple Premiership player,